Good afternoon. It's 12:07. This is 89.1 WBOY, your home for NPR news and diverse music. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad to be with you on this Thursday afternoon. With me, of course, Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florist. Doug, you're not wearing your usual Broadview shirt here today. It says Little Italy instead.
Yeah, well, I just grab a clean shirt every day, whatever it happens to be. Have you noticed, though, all my shirts are like navy blue?
Oh, yeah.
Or black.
Yeah.
That's it. And a friend of mine says you shouldn't wear those dark colors. It draws bees.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, yeah. We learned that a few shows ago. Yeah. That's why beekeepers wear light
white
colors or white.
Yeah.
Well, this is the Outer Spaces edition of our program. And, of course, it's a show driven by you. If you have a plant or garden question or comment, give us a call, 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can send us a tweet at middaymatters. And, of course, besides your questions and comments, we'd love to hear what's going on in your outer spaces these days. Doug, we were talking a bit before the show here about a problem that people can run into. They a lot of folks might drag their feet on pruning.
Well, they do. You know, it's a problem all the time. People don't know, when should I prune? It's the big question. I get phone calls all season long. Mm-hmm. But the problem is there's a lot of things that should be pruned right now. And if they don't do it, it's kind of like it's too late. Here's what happens. Let me give you the rundown of what happens. You have azaleas or lilacs or magnolias or, a lot of these types of plants that bloom in the spring. And then you just don't get around to pruning them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are they going to do? They're going to just continue to grow,
right,
and get bigger and bigger. And if you don't prune them, by the time summer's over, they're going to be monstrous. And then you're going to say, I got to prune these.
This is far too big. I have to get in there and start cutting.
And it's the wrong time, because in a lot of cases, when you prune late in the season on spring blooming plants, mm-hmm, you're cutting your flowers off for next year. So I can't emphasize enough, June, which is almost over, is the time to prune all of these blooming plants. Now, let me tell you what happens if you don't get the job done in June. July comes.
Ta-da.
Ta-da! Well, you can still cut them back in July, but you're losing growing time now.
Right.
You want to prune them after they bloom and prune them down fairly low, because the rest of the summer is growing time, and they will grow to a nice, bushy, leafy size by fall, and then when the cool nights start hitting and the frosts, that'll help the plants to set their buds for next year. So the later you wait to do your pruning, the less growing time you have. This is why garden mums should be pruned really any time now. The last of June, first part of July. You know, I always say the 4th of July because it's an easy date to remember, but you could do it right now. Your garden mums should be pruned because they're growing. Some of them even budded and tried to bloom, but it's out of character for them to bloom this time of the year. But they need to be cut so that they still have growing time. Now, if you don't like a hardy mum that's got any height at all, you can wait a little longer. The longer you wait, the less growing time you give it. And so it'll actually still bloom, but it'll bloom shorter. So it's kind of a guessing game.
We want to hear from you. If you have a question, let's say, about pruning or anything in your plant, in the realm of plant and garden, I should say. We'd really love to hear from you this hour. No calls in the hopper so far, so if you give us a ring, you'll get right through. 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. That's always available. Or you can send us a tweet at middaymatters. We'd love to hear from you. And, Doug, you mentioned July, the 4th of July, but summer is coming a little bit quicker than that tomorrow.
Yeah, right. Yeah, first day of summer is tomorrow, and it's going to be in the upper 80s.
Yeah.
Saturday, Sunday, 89. That's pretty hot.
Yeah, Monday, a little too much for me.
Monday 90, so it's even hotter. But as near as I can tell, there's no chance of rain before Wednesday of next week. And when I was looking at the weather thing on my computer, it showed 0% chance of precipitation. 0% seems pretty safe.
And mostly sunny as far as the eye can see on the WBOI weather forecast here as well. Well, we can continue talking about summer preparations and what we can look forward to in the summer. We do have a caller, though.
All right.
And of course, if you want to get in touch with us, we certainly hope you will with your questions or comments. It's 800-471-9264. Let's open the phones here and go to Katie. Katie, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hello.
Hello, Katie.
So here's the thing. I am scared to death of pruning anything. I've got azaleas and mums, and I've never pruned them because I'm always afraid that I'm going to go too far or just kill it altogether.
Well, you know, people are always afraid to prune, and there was a couple of years ago we had azaleas that had bloomed in the spring, and we didn't sell those particular ones. And I had said something to the one girl, prune these azaleas back, and I sort of showed her, and then I left.
Hmm.
And I came back, and she pruned them, but just barely pruned them. And I thought, I'm not going to say nothing, but I'm going to fix this. And so I repruned them because they weren't cut back near enough. And it's amazing when you cut back a hard-stemmed plant like azaleas, it practically doesn't leave you a lot of foliage. And this is what scares you. But trust me, when you do it, all summer long they will grow. They'll get full and dark green and be absolutely gorgeous for next year. If you don't prune them, you just lose out. See, pruning stimulates growth. And if you don't prune, you're not going to stimulate growth. You can throw fertilizer on them. That's not going to help.
Hmm. It's the
act of pruning that helps.
So how far back should you prune?
Oh, I should think at least a third on an azalea, at least a third of the way back from the height of the plant. And with the garden mums, these are soft-stemmed plants, and they have lots and lots of branches. And by rights, they should be dug up and divided and then replanted in the ground at about 18 to 20-inch intervals and then cut those things almost in half, and then all the branching will come out and it'll regrow. You'll have nice, shorter, bushy plants with zillions of flowers. Now, you can count them, but there's zillions of flowers, and they'll be nicer looking flowers because you pruned. Otherwise, you just get this silly growth that tries to bloom, and it just produces tiny little flowers, and they fall over because they didn't get pruned, and now they're too tall. And
Doug, ultimately, you know, like you mentioned earlier, ultimately it kind of sets you behind in terms of the progression of the growing season.
Absolutely. So. And by not pruning, you're hurting your plant.
Should I dig them up and separate them now?
The mums?
Yeah.
Yeah, this would be fine because you can do it and prune at the same time. When you prune them, that'll take a lot of the shock away when you replant them. And how do you separate them? Well, if you dig them up and there's a clump of roots, you can just take a knife or a hatchet or a shovel, sounds cruel, and just cut it right in half and then cut the two halves in half. Now you got four plants. I have literally dug up garden mums early in the spring. You should really do this in May, but that's okay. You can still do it, especially since you're going to cut them back.
Okay.
I do it in early May, separate them, plant them, and then wait about 4 to 6 weeks, then I cut them back. But now that time has gone by, the 4 to 6 weeks. So you can dig them up, divide them, cut them back, replant them, and they will grow. And what if you did that and you quadrupled your crop or even more, and half of them didn't grow? You'd still have twice as many plants. So it doesn't even matter. But the thing is, you need to do that, and you're kind of running out of time for doing it right. So,
well, I'll do it today then.
Yep.
And Katie,
we
hope you go to the garden with confidence and very good luck.
Yeah.
Thank you very
Don't
much.
Be afraid to prune. It helps.
All right,
it helps
you.
The plant. Does not hurt it.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-471-9264 is the number to call. We do have a number of callers in line with questions for you, Doug. Let's keep going here.
Let's move on.
Let's open the phones and go to 80. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I got into mischief as usual, and I have a beautiful standard hibiscus in a plastic pot.
Uh-huh.
Can I repot it and put it into clay? I intend to bring it in for the winter and then put it back outside, but it'll be outside.
Sure.
How much can I pot it up?
You can repot it. The sooner the better. It's always nice to do transplanting when the weather's nice, and it certainly is ideal right now. But the bigger the pot, the less often you'll have to water. But always water thoroughly when you water. But at first, you won't have to do it all that often. Now, in the pot that it's originally in, the one you're talking about, you probably have to water that every day. But once you transplant it, you may go 3 or 4 days between waterings. I planted...
Okay, then it won't get too stalky or leggy or any of those things.
No. The standard hibiscus tree will basically keep its shape. And when it's finished blooming in one... It's nice to keep the blooms trimmed off because they tend to make seed pods. That just brings up a whole other issue, and that's seed pods. When plants have seed pods, that slows the growth down, slows the blooming down, and takes away from the strength. Because when a plant's making seeds, it only cares about the seeds, not the health of the plant.
Well, I'm used to that with pansies.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I will pot it up then this afternoon.
Very good. I'm sorry I didn't get to see you. I saw you were at the place when I left. But
yes, well, it's
I was on my way out.
Well, good. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dady, have a great day. Thank you. Bye-bye. 800-471-9264 if you have a question or comment for Doug Hackbarth this hour. You can always, of course, email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Doug, let's get a couple more callers in before we decide to take a break here. Let's open the phones and go to Tanya. Tanya, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi. I am a world-class procrastinator, and we have not planted anything in our garden. Is it too late to plant anything?
It is not too late to plant everything unless you can't find it. In other words, people are coming around for, like, jalapeno peppers. There are no more. They're coming around for squash and things like that. You'd have to do it from seed because there's no more plants. Other than the fact that things are running out, say you wanted to plant roses, there are no more. So, you know, that's the only problem with late. But if you're just going to plant your garden and make it look nice, go see what's available, buy what you like. It's definitely not too late to plant anything. And you waited long enough that a lot of things are on sale these days, so you can probably get a good bargain.
Okay. Yeah. Am I still able to plant seeds?
Oh, a lot of seeds, yeah. I mean,
do you have recommendations?
Yeah, I was going to ask her. Do you have any seeds in particular that you're thinking about?
No. We've tried planting a garden several years now, and we don't get much. I guess we're lucky that our kids are alive because everything else we grow dies. So whatever is the easiest, I guess.
You've become a black thumb instead of a green thumb.
Very nice.
Yeah, thank goodness the kids have grown. You're right. Hey, one other thing about planting seeds. You know, there's a lot of people in the gardening world who like to do a fall crop. And a fall crop of broccoli, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, all those cold crops that we talk about early in the spring. Well, the time to plant those seeds is actually in July. You plant the seeds, and then you transplant them space them out in your vegetable garden, and then you grow a fall crop. Now, let me tell you real quickly how I do it. I take a section of my garden where I don't have anything. And I sprinkle the seeds down fairly thin, but not in any kind of rows, no spacing, nothing. And then, because there's always too many seeds in a packet anyway. And then as the plants grow, the broccoli and the cauliflower, etc., I will go through that bunch that's growing and pick out all the best ones, transplant those into spaced out areas, and grow those. And the rest, just turn it under for compost in your garden. Because, like I say, there's always too much. Now, you can't transplant radishes and carrots, those root vegetables. It messes them up. So, but you can still plant all that stuff. Radishes only take a month. So you can plant those every month right up till it's too cold. So, yeah, there's a lot that you can do. And sometimes the seed racks disappear if you wait too long. So don't wait too long.
Okay, thank you so much.
You bet.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Tanya, and good luck.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. 800-471-9264 is the number if you have a question or comment today for Doug Hackbarth. Of course, you can always email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet @middaymatters. We just have to take a quick break here, so we'll be back in 2 minutes. And Nancy, I know you're on the line with us. Please do stick around. This is Midday Matters.
How was the Obama campaign able to beat Mitt Romney in 2012? Journalist Jonathan Alter says it was in part by ignoring the human desire not to be irritating with online fundraising appeals. On the next Fresh Air, Alter talks about what he calls the most consequential election of recent times. His new book is The Center Holds. Join us.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, announcing this year's Most Improved Campaign Award recipient, GAI Consultants, and Park Center. That's what it means to live united. UnitedWayAllenCounty.org.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Are your investments tax-wise? More information at Reinbold and Anderson on the web at reinboldandanderson.com.
It's Thursday, June 20th. This is Midday Matters Outer Spaces on 89.1 WBOY. It's your home for NPR News and diverse music. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you this afternoon. I almost said this morning there, Doug.
I know. It changes just when the show starts.
That's right. Doug Hackbarth is with me in studio from Broadview Florists, and we're here to take your plant and garden questions and just to hear what's going on in your outer spaces as we are so close now to the change of seasons. Summer starts tomorrow. If you want to get in touch with us, do call us 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet @middaymatters. We'd love to hear from you this hour. On the line now, we have a very patient caller, Nancy. Welcome to Midday Matters.
Yes, I have some questions on pruning.
Yes.
I have a very large rhododendron. It's about 30 years old, mm-hmm. and we've trimmed it a couple of times, but it's almost to the eaves of our house now.
Mm.
And also our clematis and lilac bushes. How do you prune those and when?
Well, let's start with lilacs. I mean clematis. If you want your clematis to be tall, you never have to prune them. However, I would thin them out because you get a lot of thickness through the center, and it's a good idea to thin out branches, I would cut out the thickest ones, if at all possible, and maybe about a third of them. If you want the height cut back, then just cut them back. You can't lose with cutting back clematis. You can either do it or not do it and cut them any. You can cut them right down to the ground and they'll grow back. So it doesn't matter. The lilacs, this is one of those spring blooming plants that need to be cut back in the spring at this time because they're finished blooming, or, except for the white ones now I see are in full bloom. But cut them back as soon as possible. I would cut back a good third of the plant and then let them grow all summer and don't touch them this fall. Don't make the mistake of cutting back everything in the fall. That's just not the right thing to do. And what was the third plant?
Oh, the rhododendron.
Oh, the rhododendron. That's a tough one. Rhododendrons are tough plants to cut back because rhododendrons and azaleas are all in the same family. An azalea is a form of a rhododendron. And I find rhododendrons a little tough to cut simply because they're so woody. And when you cut anything off, you're left with bare stems. I mean, it's just that type of a plant. It seems like all the leaves are out on the end.
Yeah.
But I think what I would do is cut them back anyway and force new growth to come out of the stems. I would try to cut back, a third or a fourth. Did you say this rhododendron is almost up to the eaves?
Yes, it's a one-story house.
Close your eyes and cut it in half.
Okay.
That's all you can do. You need to shorten this thing, and I would cut it at least in half and get it halfway up your house. You can cut it back further if you like, but everything you do is going to be drastic to that plant. It may not bloom again next year, but by 2 years from now, it should be back in shape. I'd cut it back.
It was gorgeous this year, and I realize we won't have the blooms next year.
Oh, yeah. And you have nothing to lose by cutting it back because it's too big.
And now's the time to do it.
Yes, or the alternate solution is to dig it up and get a new one because, a good, healthy one that's not so tall. But certainly cut it back at least in half and wait and see what happens. You can always buy a new one next spring.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
Nancy, thanks for the call. Have a great day.
Rhododendron, that's a tough one. I saved it for last. Those are just tough.
You have to build up to the climax there, the tough one. We hope Nancy has good luck with that, and we hope you'll get in touch. A lot of folks getting in touch with us with their questions and their comments this hour. We'd love it if you called us, 800-471-9264. You can always email us middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet @middaymatters. Doug, we had a commenter on our Facebook page here. Yeah. Let me read this to you. About watering grass? I have one area with grass seed, straw, and fresh soil. I've been watering daily for about 6 weeks, mowed once, and fertilized this week. It's grown fairly thick, about 4+ inches. When can I scale back on the watering? This is from Patrick.
Well, from the description I heard, it scaled back in the beginning, but it's working. Because for new grass seed, I would probably water 3 to 6 times a day, but quickly. The way you read that, it sounded like he watered it good every day. It's always best to water new seed lightly so you don't wash it away. And then later you can do the thorough watering. But I wouldn't water it anymore. Like we got all these dry days coming.
I was going to say, we have probably potentially a dry spell coming up twice
Thursday. Maybe he could do it again on Friday. Mm-hmm. No, I don't mean that. On Sunday. And then keep an eye on it maybe again on Wednesday. I would really start skipping days between waterings and get it used. And water deeply now. Don't do the fast watering several times a day or you'll end up with fungus problems. So, just do it.
Time to scale back.
Skip days between waterings. And if you ever have rain, then just stop altogether.
Patrick, we appreciate the comment here, and good luck and congratulations on some good grass. It sounds like you're doing
like
great.
Yeah.
Looks like we have another caller on the line here. So let's open the phones and go to Linda. Linda, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, this is me. I'm listening to the show and very interested.
Good.
I have an issue. I cut down a butterfly bush that was at the eaves, like some previous people.
Yes,
when you think more is better. Okay, I trimmed that early spring, and it's growing, but I have some holes in the leaves that are coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know what it may be.
Well, it's hard to say. I've seen grasshoppers do that type of thing. How high up are the leaves with the holes? High up?
Oh, the leaves are coming just like regular. I mean, it's to my shoulders now. I have it pulled and tied up because I don't like it hanging all over, and it's a big plant. But the leaves look great. They're appropriate length in between and size, but it's like on the very end leaves where they curl and come out, I noticed some holes.
Well, and are the holes in the middle of the leaves, or are they eating from the edge in?
It kind of looks like the edge.
The edge. Well, I'll tell you what happens a lot of times is you get these caterpillars. We're seeing caterpillars on the parsley plants by the millions. Caterpillars, which then turn into the butterflies later on.
Right. Well, it's a butterfly bush.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't know it drew caterpillars, but I suppose when those butterflies come, they're laying the eggs. And that's what becomes the larva and eventually the caterpillars. So it's probably something like that. But normally you can see caterpillars in the daytime.
I haven't seen anything, and I've fertilized, I've kept it watered, I've added new dirt.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of other insects that come out that generally don't come out except at night because they can't take the sun. And so if it's not, but the caterpillars would be there all day if you had them. So you've got some other kind of a worm. Remember that little insects like spider mites and aphids, they don't eat holes in plants. They just suck the juices out.
Yeah.
All right. So this isn't your problem. It's got to be a bigger insect. More than likely some sort of larva that is a worm now and is eating holes in your plant. And they might go hide in the daytime. But there's a product that you can get that's very safe, very, I can't think of the right word for this.
Environmentally friendly.
Yeah, that's it. And that is Dipel. D-I-P-E-L, Dipel. That's what I love about chemicals. They usually spell them just like they sound.
D-I-T-E-L.
No, D-I-P-E-L. P is
like
in Paul.
Like a P, Paul.
Yeah, Dipel.
Okay.
And other, you may have heard it called BT. BT is the same thing as Dipel, and BT stands for Bacillus thuringiensis.
So say that five times fast.
Yeah, that's what BT is.
Okay.
And it's organic was the word I was looking for.
Okay.
Very safe. Organic gardeners, many of them will use it. Some organic gardeners will use nothing. So, but this is...
I be able to get this at a big store, a specialty store?
I know you can get it at mine, but I don't know. It's a product that a lot of the clerks don't understand or know what it is, and so... They may not order it. It's hard to say. But we do a lot of BP or BT.
Okay.
And that is, you can dust it on. You can mix it with water and spray it. It doesn't dissolve in water. So if you're going to spray it, you have to put it in a sprayer, shake it, spray, shake some more, spray. Because what you're doing is you're stirring it up in the water. And when you spray, it hits the leaves, the water evaporates, and you're left with this fine dusting on your leaves. And these worms will eat this, and it actually gives them diarrhea. And this is what happens. It's great stuff to use on broccoli and a lot of the vegetable plants that you eat because it's a safe product to use. But, you know, this is why they always tell you, wash your vegetables and fruits, because you want to wash the dipel off.
Okay.
Right. Okay, I will get that and see what I can do.
Very good.
Good luck,
Thanks
Linda.
For
Thank
your
you.
Help.
All right, bye-bye.
You bet.
Bye.
We have time for one more caller here, Doug, before we have to go to our news break. So
Alrighty.
Let's open the phones here one more time and go to Dave. Dave, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, Dave.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. What's up?
You're on the air. Go ahead.
I had just planted a few fruit trees. I planted a couple pears,
uh-huh.
a couple apple trees, and a peach tree. I put some... kind of some root starter on them whenever I planted them, use mm-hmm. some peat moss, things like that around it. My question is my peach tree's already, you know, how a peach tree will get kind of sticky. The leaves won't be all the way down the end of the branches. Is it safe to prune those back now, or should I wait till the winter prune?
Well,
and then also, how often do I need to be spraying these for bugs? Should I do it after every rain, every so many days, or how
yeah,
should I
this
about
is
that?
This is a plant that, if you wait until fall or winter when it's dormant in the wintertime, you can prune it back then, but you want to do what we call selective pruning. You don't want to cut the entire tree back, but just cut back enough branches and whatnot to make it look uniform and nice. Peach trees have a tendency to grow sideways, it seems like. So sometimes you'll have a branch that's way out there to the left or the right, and it's like, this is way out there. And I see people get 2x4s and prop them up from the ground. And really, you could cut that branch off and just don't cut them all, because you do want to have peaches the following year. But
yeah.
I would like to see you prune them back really when they're dormant. It
okay.
can be any time through the winter.
Okay, there's some that just don't have any leaves on them right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like some...
Do you think those branches
are
dead?
Some of them are full leaves, and then some of them are just like... Yeah, they're almost like dead sticks sticking out the side.
If they're dead, I'd cut them off right down to the main trunk. Now, you can take your thumbnail, and you can scrape on the bark and see if it looks green or alive inside, or whether it looks dried up and woody.
Mm-hmm.
And that would certainly tell you... if it's dead. But I don't think cutting that branch in half would stimulate growth. It could. You could cut, you know, 3/4 of it back if you think there's any chance there's growth on it. But, you know, in most cases, fruit trees, you just don't need that many branches that they want to produce. So I would prune it in the fall. And you asked about spraying it. My favorite spray for fruit trees is Home Orchard Fruit Tree Spray. I don't have any, by the way. But anyway, that's a great product. Home. Well, I say that, Sean, because then people come out and go, well, you said I don't have it. So
yeah.
I'm warning you. Fruit Tree and Orchard Spray. And it's a great product. It takes care of insects and fungus and all of those types of things. The thing with fruit trees is, as the fruit, you don't want to spray while they're blooming, but then as the fruit develops, you have to spray way more often in order to keep the insects from coming in, stinging them, causing the worms. You know, we've all seen an apple with a worm in it. This is when it happens, and this is when the sprays come in handy. This is why I like the professionals when they grow apples. I have friends that offer me apples. I don't want them. They got worms in them.
No.
I like
it's a little extra protein.
I like the commercial. Now, growing a fruit tree at home is a fun hobby, but you do have to keep up on it while the fruit's being produced. Anyway, there you go.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Dave, we appreciate the call, and good luck, and have a great day. All right, bye-bye. We do need to take a quick break here for the news. In the meantime, we hope you'll get in touch with us. It's 800-471-9264. Email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet, @middaymatters. Doug, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about pruning roses, a question from Michael here, and we'll do a little critter identification as well.
Absolutely.
Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
How was the Obama campaign able to beat Mitt Romney in 2012? Journalist Jonathan Alter says it was in part by ignoring the human desire not to be irritating with online fundraising appeals. On the next Fresh Air, Alter talks about what he calls the most consequential election of recent times. His new book is The Center Holds. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. A bishop has removed a Roman Catholic priest from public ministry after a credible allegation of sexual abuse while the priest served in Africa about 20 years ago. The Fort Wayne South Bend Diocese said Wednesday that Bishop Kevin Rhodes took the action against the Reverend Cornelius Ryan after being notified of the allegation by the South Bend-based U.S. province of the Congregation of the Holy Cross. The New Sentinel reports Ryan was serving as administrator of St. Joseph Catholic Church Hessenkessel on Fort Wayne's south side after the diocese removed the parish pastor, the Reverend Tom Lombardi, in December 2011 because of an allegation of sexual abuse of a minor at a previous parish. A message seeking additional information and comment was left at the congregation's South Bend office. Indiana Republican Party Chairman Eric Holcomb will step down next month, and he's one of several top officials leaving the state party in July. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
Holcomb informed the Indiana Republican Party's state committee at its meeting Wednesday morning of his intention to step down, effective July 9th. In a statement, he says he believes a year with no local or statewide elections is the best time to transition out of party leadership, a move he says he's been contemplating for some time. Holcomb is the former campaign manager and deputy chief of staff for Governor Mitch Daniels and says the change allows new Governor Mike Pence to set the party's direction. In a statement, Pence praised the outgoing chairman's leadership during what he calls one of the most successful tenures in state party history. Pence says he was grateful Holcomb agreed to stay on during the early days of his new administration. State GOP Executive Director Justin Garrett, Vice Chair Sandy Huddleston, and National Committee Woman and former Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman are also leaving their positions within the Republican Party. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
Indiana melon farmers are trying to better understand Food and Drug Administration requirements in preparations for upcoming inspections later this year. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Gretchen Frazee reports, the FDA plans to inspect all cantaloupe operations nationwide in response to a pair of bacterial outbreaks.
More than two dozen farmers gathered Wednesday at a farm in Vincennes to talk about what they say is an uncomfortable but necessary topic, how to prevent foodborne illness. In 2011, a listeria outbreak originated from a melon farm in Colorado, and last year, salmonella was traced back to cantaloupes at Chamberlain Farms in Owensville, Indiana. That's prompting the FDA to inspect all melon farms this year, and Purdue Extension educator Scott Monroe says his organization is trying to help growers prepare by hosting a series of workshops.
Our goal is to help these guys to do everything they can on their individual farms to make sure we're dropping that risk as much as possible to produce the most safe and wholesome product that we possibly can.
At the workshops, growers learn how FDA inspections are conducted and how to better prepare their packing houses for the upcoming harvest. Brad Wanning is a cantaloupe farmer in Vincennes and says growing quality crops is not just a matter of public safety. It's also a matter of heritage.
We don't want this industry to die. It would be easy to just quit growing them and not do that, but we don't want to do that. We have a lot of pride. Our grandfathers and great-grandfathers did this, so we're not ready to give up the ship yet.
The final workshop will take place in Poseyville on Friday. For Indiana Public Broadcasting with producer Rachel Morello, I'm Gretchen Frazee.
Today, we can expect mostly sunny skies this afternoon with a high of 85, and we'll have clear skies this evening with a low of 63. And on Friday, more sunshine with a high near 87 and a low of 67 on Friday evening. You're listening to Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI, your home for NPR news and diverse music.
Quarter till 1 o'clock. This is Midday Matters Outer Spaces on 89.1 WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, along with Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florists, and we're taking your plant and garden questions on this, the final day of spring. Summer comes around tomorrow. If you'd like to get in touch with us, do call us 800-471-9264. can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet at Midday Matters. I know we have a caller on the line we'll get to in just a moment. Elena, please stay with us. First, though, we've had an email that's been waiting quite a while here. Doug Michael says, I have a rose bush that shot up 4.5 or 5 feet last year, and I didn't get it pruned before winter. When would be the best time to do a major pruning on the rose bush?
Well, roses are interesting because the proper time to prune a rose is actually in April. A lot of people want to do it in the fall. It's the wrong time to do it. If you're going to do any pruning in the fall, late fall, you need to only prune partway back. Cut branches partway. Out. Yeah, partway. And then remember, you're going to reprune it in April. And the reason for that, if you cut it all the way back the way you want it in the fall or in the late winter almost, there's a good chance that the branches that you kept, a lot of them will die or they'll die back halfway. That's why you don't cut it back that far until spring. Mm-hmm. Then in the spring, do it. Now, let's say in his case, he didn't get it done. Well, you can cut them back anytime through the summer, really. In fact, every time they bloom, you're supposed to cut back usually between the area where there's three leaves on a leaf section. Mm-hmm. And five leaves on a leaf section. You go down to the five leaf section, and that's where you are properly supposed to prune each stem that has flowers on it.
Okay.
But I wanted to say this about roses too. I have seen roses that we've trimmed the flowers off when they die and all that stuff, and then all of a sudden by midsummer, they just look terrible. They might have gotten fungus. They may have gotten mildew, which is fungus. They may have insects or whatever. Well, it's almost like here's your choices. Throw them out or cut them way back. And we have done this. Cut them way back in midsummer, and they've regrown, bloomed,
come back looking
and
better
became
than ever.
Beautiful plants. So, you can do that.
All right. Yeah. Well, Michael, good luck, and we appreciate the question here. We'll get to insect identification in just a moment here, but we do have a caller on the line. Let's open the phones and go to Elena. Elena, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a couple questions. If you can only get to one, that's just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a plethora of mint growing in my yard. When I moved in, it was there, and it is just spreading like fire.
Oh.
And it's in my vegetable garden. Before I planted my vegetables this spring, I like uprooted all of it. I had a mound of mint roots, and it is just so aggressive. I don't know how to get rid of it, and I don't want to kill all my grass and my vegetables. So that's one of my questions, is what's the best way to get rid of that? And then I have another question. I have really two well-established lilac bushes, and only the tops bloom. And I don't know what to do about that.
They only bloom at the very top.
Yes, the very top.
Well, it might be the variety. You know, I've seen lilacs that do that. They just produce blooms at the top. I think what you should do, though, is it's time to cut them back. So cut them back. Grow them this summer. Fertilize them when the weather's nice like it is right now. Don't fertilize when it's hot and dry. But fertilize anytime you have ideal weather like we've had here the last week or two or three. It's just been super. And then fertilize again in the fall, in the early fall only. And then next spring, get some superphosphate or some kind of a fertilizer granule that you can just throw around on the ground at the beginning of the season. It'll probably be sometime in April. And that will help when it rains. It will fertilize them, and hopefully you'll get more blooms and larger blooms. That's the whole idea.
Okay.
But don't do any pruning in the fall.
Okay, but I can prune now. Just prune like the whole bush a little bit.
You should prune
and then
now. You should get the job done as soon as possible. Absolutely.
All right.
And your other question had to do with what?
The mint. I have mint growing. I have a ton of mint growing, and I cannot get rid of it.
Talk about your invasive plants. Here you go.
Yes, it was there. When I moved in, I was like, this is so nice. When I mow the lawn, it smells wonderful, and now I just hate it.
You know, we sell mint. We sort of watch where we put it, even when it's on the shelf for sale, because it drops to the ground, and the next thing you know, you've got mint growing in stones. It grows anywhere.
Yes.
And it is a crazy, crazy plant. When people say, do you have mint? We all just sort of look at them and say, why? And we do have it. But it's like, why would you want this stuff? Are you sure you want this stuff? Well, yes, I'm going to put it in containers and I'm going to set it on concrete and hopefully it won't take off and spread all over the place. Let me tell you this about mint, because I know everyone hates to use the really powerful weed killers. But we had mint growing around our gas meter at work, and it was year after year getting thicker and thicker and thicker. And finally, one year, I just decided I'm going to hit this stuff with Roundup or something equivalent to that, like Kelzol, high yields Kelzol is the same type of product. And I just decided I'm going to spray it. Now, one spraying is not going to do it. I sprayed it. It sort of died down and then started growing again. I sprayed it again, and I probably sprayed it 3 or 4 or 5 times. Now, this is in a stony area, and you know what? It finally died, and I haven't had mint growing in that spot for years. I can't even remember how long ago it was that I killed it. So it can be killed, but this was in a stoned area.
Yeah,
and so when you're talking
about
doing it in your grass or in your garden, it just becomes tougher. You sort of have to sacrifice all the stuff to get rid of it. And then later.
Well, that's good to know, so I don't.
Yeah, it's just not easy to get rid of. You can't dig it up. It won't help.
Yeah,
it's just insane. It's insane stuff.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Elena, we appreciate the call. Bye-bye.
Tough product to get rid of.
Oh, yeah.
Mint.
We have about 6 minutes left in the program here, Doug, and I wanted to turn your attention. I think you've seen it actually to a photo that was posted by Anita on our Facebook page. Anita says, "What's this little critter on my parsley plant?
Isn't that great?
I picked them off, relocated them to a new home, but was just curious what they were. And it, to me, it looks like a caterpillar. It's got a black body. It looks like yellow and white stripes." A few spots of yellow even, and it reminds me of the body of a caterpillar for a monarch butterfly.
Well, there you go, and that's exactly right. It is a caterpillar, and this is the great, I'm glad she posted that picture because it's what we talked about earlier, caterpillars on the parsley. Mm-hmm. And I looked at this picture and I said, look, there's a caterpillar on parsley, just like I talked about. They seem to love parsley, and so that, and relocating, it's a great thing to do. There's no reason you have to kill them.
Sure.
You can relocate them. You could snip the branch off that it's on and take that somewhere else and set it in a yard or whatever. And hopefully it will then develop into a monarch butterfly or some other kind of butterfly. Mm-hmm. I was telling Sean on the commercial break that there's different kinds of caterpillars because there's different kinds of butterflies.
Oh, sure.
And the one thing that we don't like to see is this darn cutworm that comes up when they eat your broccoli and cauliflower and things like that. And what happens is in the summer, like in early June or mid-June, you'll start seeing these white millers.
Millers.
Okay, we'll call them butterflies. They're actually some sort of moth.
Hmm.
White millers, and they fly around, and they look like they're just hopping around, touching your plants. They're actually laying eggs each time they touch.
Oh, wow.
And every time they touch, they're laying eggs, and you're going to have these worms, not caterpillars, but the miller worms.
Hmm.
Everything that flies, the house fly lays eggs. Maggots. I mean, everything that flies lays eggs, and you get some kind of a worm or a creature like that, and it's very disheartening when it's in your broccoli.
and Doug, I won't mention. I do know that you fly too, but the comparison probably isn't apt.
Yeah,
so.
No, I'm not laying eggs anywhere.
Doug's a pilot on the side as well. Doug, we have a few minutes here, and another question. A caller left a message wondering how to get his grass all the same color. I guess this caller has some patchy, spotty grass anyway.
Well, you know, when you first plant grass, you usually have a mix of Kentucky Blue and perennial rye or maybe annual rye. And, of course, that would be two different textures and colors. But the annual rye will freeze out in the wintertime, then you're left with the Kentucky Blue, and it's beautiful. You may have crabgrass mixed in with your regular grass. How do you get it all the same? Well, you can use the weed and feed products. You can use crabgrass preventer. So sorry about that.
Bless you, Don.
Crabgrass preventer and the fertilizers. Now, when you fertilize grass and it grows, grass is stronger than weeds. A lot of people don't know that. They see their yard and they go, I have a lot of weeds. Grass, if it's grown right, will beat the weeds out. But also you have to cut it longer. Some people that cut real short, they think, well, if I cut it short, I won't have to mow quite so often. Well, if you cut it long every time, you just mow the same amount of time. You just cut it longer. But long grass shades out the weeds. And that's just a simple, let's call it natural way to eliminate weeds out of your yard, is to cut your grass longer. It's healthier for the grass, and it prevents weeds.
And as long as it's not out of control, I mean, a long grass can look great too.
Yes, yes, absolutely. But that's basically it. You know, certainly lawn fertilizer helps. Something that's high in nitrogen, which is the first number of the three.
Fertilize it, cut it long.
Yeah,
sounds
that's
good.
It. Yep.
We appreciate the question. Doug, we only have about maybe 90 seconds here. A quick question, hopefully a quick answer. Caller says, we have an oak tree and the leaves are drying up and curling up. Is there a way that you know that they can fix it?
Well, you know, I see
drying
this kind
up
of,
and curling up.
Yeah, I've seen this kind of problem happen. It's a problem down in the root system more than likely. And tree fungicide of some sort, probably the best thing you could use, because it's really hard. When you're using an insecticide or a fungicide that's granule, it has to be absorbed through the root system and sent up to the top of the plant. The bigger the plant, the harder it is for it to do that. And the same with fertilizers and everything else. And so that's why a lot of times they're sprayed on to get it up there quickly, and it's more effective. But I would say, just in general maintenance, get a granulated fungicide and sprinkle it all the way around your tree from the trunk to the drip line, and put that down. Once a month is more than enough. Every 6 to 8 weeks would probably be about right. And it's just something you can't fix instantly.
All right.
It takes time.
Well, Doug, we're going to have to leave it there, but thanks very much for being with us on this edition of the program.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody who called in, who was sent their questions along. Thanks to you for listening as well. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1 and online at nipr.fm. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester. Hope you'll stay with us. Fresh Air with your host, Terry Gross, is coming up next. It's 1 o'clock. Have a great day.